I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to minute 30 of season 6 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today to finish off week number 6 is Lisa Leahy of the Rabbit Hole Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Lisa.
Hello, I figured I'd hang out with you one last day before I go back into the hole for the winter.
Well, I'm gonna take your mother on you.
Yes, you know what? She'll certainly have something to say about it. That's
okay. Then I'm gonna call the police.
There you go. Do that. That's a better idea because my mother will just be here for days and we'll never get out of here.
Okay, especially with those cats.
Yes, you gotta look out for that. My goodness.
That's true. Understandable. So, minute 30 begins with Mary starting to threaten George,
mm-hmm.
and ends with a board meeting.
I mean, as you do, it's a perfectly reasonable transition.
Of course. Well, I mean, they do it in a nice way. We'll get there. We'll explain.
Yes.
How they get there. So it sort of makes sense. And. So we ended things yesterday with Mary getting a little trapped in a hydrangea bush,
mm-hmm.
Without her robe. Let's keep it at that, because yes. We don't really know. You know, we don't know what she is or isn't wearing at this point. And again, it doesn't matter. That's part of the the joke of this whole scene is that we don't need to know.
Correct.
It doesn't matter. You know, she is not dressed properly. I think that's
correct.
The appropriate way to look at it.
An accident has occurred and she has lost her robe. She has disrobed.
That's right. I'm so happy that you said that and not me.
It's funny to me.
Yes, I agree. I think it is. And George starts getting an idea of, maybe he's playing around with her a little bit. Isn't going to give her back the robe right away.
Around the bushes.
That's right. And then she ended yesterday's minute by saying, "Shame on you." And she goes, "I'm going to tell your mother on you."
Which is the greatest. Like, that's an authentic threat for that time period.
Do you think that that's like a threat that's going to help? Forget about what George answers in a second. But in general, for her to say, "I'm going to tell your mother on you," you know, what's she going to say? You know, your son, your 21-year-old son accidentally took my robe and refused to give it back. And here I am in the bushes with very little clothes on.
I mean, she would never, because she's going to be mortified no matter what she does. But I think he's the kind of guy who would be embarrassed by the way he treated a girl. So it might be worth the threat, but there's nothing she could say that wouldn't mortify her in telling that story.
Correct.
So she's got no way to win here. None.
Right. And there's also another problem. How is she going to tell his mother on it?
How's she going to get there?
That is right. She's going to have a little bit of a problem getting there.
You are right.
Okay. And then his response is great. He goes, "Well, my mother's way up there on the corner there."
So good. Like, well, she's way. I mean, same kind of thing you're saying. Like, well, how exactly are you going to get over there to do that?
That's right. Which tells us that he's not that far from his house at this point.
True.
You know.
But it doesn't matter how far. Anything not in that hydrangea bush is too far for her.
Correct. Now,
might as well be on the moon.
Do you think he's also trying to say that his mother actually might approve of this?
Since no, she would never.
Because I mean, we'll see later on. I think it's next week or the week after. You know, she's very much wants Mary for George.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
right.
But maybe not in these type of, maybe not through these circumstances.
Not when, you know, he's got her robe and poor Mary is stuck in this bush. No, that's not quite the ideal of what she's expecting for her son.
That's right. That's right. No, she likes Mary and probably yes. She makes it seem as if she wants her, that she might be very good for George. Now, she might be very good for George because George is able to tease her. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think it's too good.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. So she ups her threats. And then she says, "Well, I'll call the police."
Mm-hmm.
And the response is
also not going to work.
Well, they're way downtown.
Yeah, they're further than his mom. There's no way.
That's right. And he says, "And you know what? They'd be on my side anyway." So I mean,
which is probably darn true.
That's right. Well, we met Bert last week, and you know, Bert did make a comment about the fact that you know, he saw when they saw Violet walking down the street. You know, he turns to them and says, I'm going to go home and visit the wife, which is a very veiled reference.
Very sneaky.
That's
yes.
Right. It's a veiled reference to you know, he's going to take a little break in the afternoon from work.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe yes. That is what George is getting at here, that, you know, you can go and say something to Bert, but I don't think Bert is really going to care. He's going to be on my side on this.
Yeah, I think he might be.
You know, Bert is the apparently local horn dog. You know, I don't know. And, you know, it's also funny that he says they're way downtown. Bedford Falls is not that large of a community. You know, is there a downtown and a uptown and things like that?
Well, I mean, there is a downtown, but again, I think it's a reference to, you know, if they're not in that hydrangea bush, she is far too far away from them to do anything.
That's true. That's a good point. And she says, okay, then I'm going to scream.
Mm-hmm.
And I love his response. He goes, well, maybe I can sell tickets.
I love it. I think it's funny.
Yes, I think it's hilarious. So the whole idea of selling tickets and ticket resale, you know, do you know like another term for that?
Ticket resale? Scalping.
Scalping. There you go. Do you know any other phrases besides scalping?
Being a jerk? No. I think you'll probably say one that I recognize, but scalping is what's coming to
mind. Okay, there's also touting. Ticket touting.
Nope, that's not one I would have come up with.
The whole idea is, you know, you buy tickets for admission to some event. Usually it'll be a sporting event or maybe a concert or something like that. And then
concerts. Yep.
And then you sell the tickets, you know, at a much larger fair.
Mm-hmm.
And people make a lot of money on those type of things.
It's bad. Yeah, it's only gotten worse.
Yeah, but it's also illegal to do so.
Right. Well, people don't care.
No, but it's only illegal to do it outside, right? I mean, if you buy online, you could sell online, can't you?
Oh, totally.
I don't think that's considered illegal. You know, I think the idea is, you know, selling it on the spot or something like that. Standing, you know, maybe it's because of loitering around type of thing.
Could be.
Yeah. But the term scalper actually comes from the idea of people that used to sell railroad tickets at lower rates.
Well, that's better than the violent form of scalping.
Right. Well, I think that's the whole idea. I think it comes from the same idea that, you know, to scalp is to cut down, right?
Cut back, that's fair.
So maybe it's to cut the price. But nowadays, mm-hmm. it's the exact opposite.
I think you're right.
You know, I doubt that you're very often going to be able to find a ticket that, you know, to a sporting event or a concert or something like that is going to be cheaper.
No, definitely.
You know, so, yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it's become a very prolific way of earning money, I guess you can say. A whole bunch of
Absolutely.
different countries have different rules and laws about whether you're allowed to. In Australia, if they catch you, that they will void the tickets.
Oh, wow.
There are places that even have, you have to pass through an outer checkpoint, and if you don't have a ticket, you can't go in, you can't get closer, that type of thing.
Interesting. Right.
Right. In Canada, it's illegal to resell tickets unless you have permission from the person who originally sold it to you, and they have some
Interesting.
very large fines that can go.
Yeah, like no transfers and
Yeah,
stuff.
it can go
Yeah.
up to $200,000, the fine for doing that. Right, but you are allowed to resell at face value. It's only if you try and resell
Yeah.
them to make a profit.
Makes sense.
Yeah. What other countries have some interesting things about it? So in Sweden, it's completely legal, no problem. Yeah, the Swedes, they don't care about these things.
Too easy going.
That's right.
Good for them.
That's right. In England, you're not allowed to resell football, soccer tickets, but there are other tickets that you're allowed to.
Okay. Well, the ones that people care less about, I guess.
Yeah. They for concerts and stuff like that, they're trying to stop it, but it never really worked. In the US, ticket resales is a $5 billion industry a year.
Wow.
That is just amazing at how many people
Yeah.
In New York State, you're only allowed to resell tickets that are above the face value if it's greater if only up to $5 more or 10%, whichever is lower.
Like how specific these get.
Well, because I guess they realize some people are going to do it anyway, so you might as well,
Well, you're either gonna, arrest everyone or like arrest a few people.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I haven't been to a sporting event or or a concert in a very long time, so I don't know. If they, I mean, actually, my sons have gone to soccer games here in Israel where they're able to buy online, tickets from people.
Oh yeah, day of. In
Yeah.
fact, at that point, people are desperate to get rid of them, so that's when it's a good time to get them.
Yeah, but some people believe that it doesn't matter, no matter what, they're going to find someone who they're going to sell it to, so they can still try to make as much of a profit as
It's
possible.
true. It's true.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. They still believe that there's no chance they're not going to sell it. So you might as well,
Right.
decide what your asking price is going to be, and you don't have to go down on that one. It's part of the fallacy. Some people think that prices are true. Like I know people who do this about traveling. They say, well, if you wait until the last minute, things will be much cheaper, but not necessarily.
I disagree, not when it comes to
No, but
travel, no
travel or
way.
going to hotels or going away to like a beach house or something like that. I mean, all these different types of things. And you'd think that, if it's the last minute, it's going to be cheaper. Some places it works, some places it doesn't.
Yeah.
Some places are saying, well,
No,
I'm
that's
not going to
fair.
give it, I'd rather not rent this out if I'm not going to get the regular price for it or whatever it is. And then George continues and says, let's see. No, the point is, in order to get this robe, I've got it. And he has an idea. And we then hear a car approaching from behind. And then he goes, I'll make a deal with you, Mary. And he gets cut off. And we'll get there in a second. What do you think this deal is that he probably is going to suggest to Mary at this point?
Oh God, I have absolutely no idea. I have never even thought about it, to be honest with you. I like that it's that vague thing that you never know what they're going to, you know, it's like what Bill Murray whispers to Scarlett Johansson at the end of Lost in Translation. I don't know. I'm not meant to know. I like to
Okay, like we don't know what's in the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. That's what you're saying, more or less.
Right.
Okay, that's right. Fair. I think that's...
I like not having the answer to everything.
Right. Okay. Okay, but I just find it interesting that he does have some sort of idea.
Mm.
You know, and...
I think it's funny. Well, he's gotten used to this idea of this power that he's got, right. But nope, now you're not.
I knowing what we know about George Bailey, I don't think his request will be something unfathomable. You know, I think his idea will probably be, I will give this back to you if you go out on a date with me tomorrow night, or something like that.
Right. Exactly. Oh, it's not going to be anything like, you exactly. know, malicious, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. But again, I think you're right. It's nice that they leave it open, especially based on what happens at this very moment. And then we hear screaming in the background. We hear George, come on home, quick! Your father's had a stroke. And we see that's Uncle Billy. You know, he drives down in a car with Harry is with him also. As you mentioned earlier this week, as soon as George hears this, you know, he just the robe to Mary, not even thinking about it anymore. You know, as far as he's concerned, that's it.
Yep, something else is going on.
We're done with the games here. You know, take it. Mm-hmm. We'll move along from there. Mm-hmm. He goes, what? He turns to Mary and goes, Mary, I'm sorry, I've got to go. And they say, come on, George, let's hurry. And then George goes, did you get a doctor? Yes. Campbell's there now.
Mm. I mean, the tone is so like abruptly shifted. Like, this is much more important. We got to go now.
Now, my first question is, how did they find him so easily? You know, and.
It's a small town. It's a small town. They've probably been driving around looking for him.
That's right. But Harry, first of all, Harry apparently didn't jump into the pool because he's still in his tux. Or he's still in George's tux.
Yep.
You know, it's not even his tux. But, you know, there's complete shock here. And, you know, but even though George is in shock, the first thing he does is give Mary back the robe. You know, he doesn't fall into like a stupor with his shock. He still has a little bit of clarity.
He's a gentleman.
He's definitely a gentleman. Absolutely. But he has clarity at the beginning in order to give it back to her. You know, in order to move forward with whatever he needs to do right now. You know, and I mean, as I said, we know that Harry didn't jump in the pool because of this, but then it makes you wonder, why didn't Harry jump in the pool? Because here you have, you know, an 18-year-old at the prom. You know, you'd think that he would have jumped in.
Right. I don't know. Maybe he knew that he looked too good in the tux and he didn't want to do it.
It's possible. Anything is possible. It's funny that George asks if they called the doctor. Like, is it more important to find George?
Yeah, but I mean, of course that's going to be his first question. You know, like, he's worried about somebody's health. He wants to make sure the doctor is on their way and they're not wasting time. No, it's not more important to find George. It's important to make sure this guy's life is saved, you know?
Right. And I love that they just automatically just throw out a name. Dr. Campbell is already there, you know? Doesn't really make a difference, you know? Do you know what the name Campbell means? Okay, it's a Gaelic word that means crooked mouth. Yes.
No kidding.
Which is actually really funny that's the name of the doctor. You know, the doctor is Crooked Mouth.
Yeah.
It is the third most common surname in Northern Ireland. The fourth most common in Jamaica. The seventh most common in Scotland, the 12th most common in Canada, 18th in Australia, and 41st most common in the U.S.
Interesting.
I mean, that means there are a lot of people named Campbell in the world.
There are a lot of Campbells out there. Yep.
And in England, it's the 65th most popular name. It can be either a first name or a last name. I'm not going to start going through names of people. The only one that jumped out at me was Campbell Scott.
Same
for the first name. The last name, I have pages and pages of of names.
Yeah, we don't need to go through that.
Yeah. No, we won't. Don't worry about it.
That's time I don't have.
There's always time, but we'll, you know. Did you know that the musician Beck, his name is really Beck Campbell?
I don't know if I knew that. Something in my brain is ringing, but I don't know if I would have been able to give you that had you not said it just now.
No, okay. No, never heard that before. Didn't know that. And then as they drive off, so the music swells and we see, you know, Mary pops her head out of the bushes and she looks very sad. You know, she realizes what's
something's
going
wrong.
On, you know.
Yeah.
But it could also be that she's also sad of the fact that, you know, her evening with George has been suspended. You know, not just because of the circumstances, but, you know, she was... You know, she maybe wanted to continue this quiet evening with George.
Yeah, would have been fun.
Yeah, we get a swipe of the screen and the scene changes, and now we are in a boardroom, an office. We see on in the back a picture of Peter Bailey, and then we have I guess the chairman speak, and he says, "I think that's all we'll need from you, George. I know you're anxious to make a train." And he says, "I have a taxi waiting downstairs." And then
he's trying to scoot.
That's right. And then the chairman says, "I want the board to know that George gave up his trip to Europe to help straighten things out here these past few months." So first of all, it's very interesting that he's making this statement. You'd think that people would realize it. You know, this is a small town. You know, it's not as if he's, you know, telling them anything new. These people apparently all know the circumstances of why George is there. This is more for us. You know, it's to tell us that 3 months a few months have passed. It is, I think, 3 months. Maybe
yeah, it's some exposition. It's right. Helping us. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think they do a nice job of that. You know,
explain, it's not too glaring.
Right. Once again, it explains George's predicament. You know, that as much as he wants to get out, he's stuck.
Yep.
And there's nothing else that he can do there. You know, except for George's gathering up his things as this is all going on. And people are going to have to come back on Monday to find out what actually happens here.
There it is. Yeah. But not with me.
No, unfortunately, not with you. Not with you. So do you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute, Lisa?
No, I think we covered it all.
All right. And is there anything you want to say about the movie in general?
No, I'm pretty happy. This is the spot that I really like best. So I'm pretty happy that I got to chat with you about it.
All right, great. So every Friday we have a segment called Oscar Oops. The idea behind this segment is the fact that, you know, over the many decades of Oscars, so, you know, everyone has their opinions as to who should have won, who wasn't nominated, who should have been nominated. You know, there's controversy every year when it comes to the Oscars. There are people who are there's always going to be someone who's disappointed every year when it comes to the Oscars. Yes. Not just the people who don't win. I'm talking about the fans. That's what it comes down to.
Yes.
So the idea of this segment is that, you know, It's a Wonderful Life was nominated for Best Picture in 1946. It lost to The Best Years of Our Lives. And, you know, that brings up the question as to, you know, what mistakes have the Oscar voters made over the years based on obviously the perspective of each of my guests. So
yes, we the experts, the real
that's
experts.
Right. Exactly. So Lisa, why don't you tell us what are the five movies that you think should have won Best Picture? Obviously, it must be something that was nominated, but didn't win for some reason. So start with your number five and work your way up.
Oh, I don't think I actually ranked them. I think I just put them. I just did them.
No,
by
you
got
to rank them. Got to rank them.
Okay, so my number five, let me see, would probably be Mystic River should have won over Return of the King. Now, Return of the King is a brilliant film. So it's like I was actually looking to this point where I'm going, you know, I don't really disagree with a whole lot of these. But that was one where I was like, you know, I really thought the performances in Mystic River were excellent. I thought the direction was excellent. I'm a fan of Dennis Lehane in the original book, so I thought that was amazing. I think some of that was also franchise fatigue, you know, like movies that keep going and going and going, I get a little tired of. So I was pretty cool thinking that, you know, that could be an option. Not my strongest, let's say. My number three in 2017, when The Shape of Water won, which I do think is a pretty damn good movie. That was a tough category because you had Three Billboards outside, what was it, Evan, mm-hmm. Missouri, and Get Out that year. And I think those two were super good. Again, the performances are really stellar. And I think that, you know, obviously the look of a film has to get in there as well. But I think Get Out is such a spectacular film. I think that's a film people are still going to be talking about 20, 30, 40 years into the future, whereas people may have already forgotten about The Shape of Water. My number four, let's see, number three, I think I'm going to go with, in terms of quality of film as opposed to my preference. And I'm going to say that my number three will be L.A. Confidential should have won over Titanic. Personally, I'm a much bigger fan of L.A. Confidential over my number two pick, but I think more people will agree with me on the number two pick. In fact, I'd argue my number two pick might be a lot of people on a lot of people's list. But, you know, Titanic looked amazing. It's not a bad movie, but I think as far as like the acting and the story, it's fine. I mean, that movie won because of the visual spectacle, and there are plenty of films that win all those technical categories that, you know, are great and they deserve it. I don't know if they're the best picture of the year. I think LA Confidential is an exceptional film. And interestingly enough, I went to go see that movie completely blind. It's the first movie I had no idea what I was seeing when I went into it. We had gone to see Kevin Kline's In and Out, and it was sold out. And so it's like, what else is starting? Okay, what's LA Confidential? Yeah, in the long run, I definitely am. LA Confidential is starting, and oh, it's like this murder mystery thing. And I'm like, all right, let's go see that. And it was so good. Love, love, love. My number two is Saving Private Ryan should have won over Shakespeare in Love. I mean, I'm an English teacher, and I know Shakespeare in Love shouldn't have won. I still don't understand how it won. Especially with a film like Saving Private Ryan. That movie is just, it's brilliant. I'm not a war movie fan. The irony of some of the films on my list, but you know, it's so good. It's so exceptionally well done. And again, people know Saving Private Ryan more than they know Shakespeare in Love. And my number one pick, again, going against type, but in 1979, Apocalypse Now should have won over Kramer versus Kramer. And, you know, I'm over here talking about how I don't like war movies, but my top two picks for this particular category are both war movies. So that'll give you an idea of how good I think those two films actually are, that they should have been the ones winning Best Picture those years.
Those are some great choices. And people are going to have to wait until the end of this podcast to find out what movies I think are there. But
yeah. Good to know. Good to know.
But since you don't listen to my final episodes, what can I tell you?
I may have to just to find out this information.
There you go. All right. So, Lisa, you want to once again, for the final time this season, tell people where they can find Lisa Leahy.
Absolutely. So, if you want to hear me yammer on for even longer amounts of time, you can check me out on the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. I am on Between the Scares, a podcast in which Jason Soto and I go through every film that Jason Blum and Blumhouse Productions have put out into the world. You can also catch me on Pictures and Conversations, a Rabbit Hole Podcast book club. And this is a show that we release the 20th of every month. We read a book, we talk about it, we complain about it, and then we decide what the next book is going to be. So you should check us out. A lot of great stuff there. And if you don't like listening to me, there are plenty of other podcasters in the network. So you can find something at rabbitholepods.com to find out what other things are out there for you to listen to.
All right. Great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, Lisa, thank you once again for joining me this season and this week. It was a lot of I had a lot
thank
of fun.
Thank you for having me. Too. I always love chatting with you. It's a good time.
All right. That's great. Yeah, really is. All right. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest, but until then, have a great weekend and hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.